This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
You'd be so nice to come home to. You'd be so nice by the fire.
As a young pilot in Britain from the outset of World War II, he knows the war will inevitably soon consume the world in a fight against fascism.
Under stars chilled by the winter, under an August
Spitfire by B.J. Allen, printed in Britain during World War II. Publisher's note. The proofs of this book had to be passed for press subsequent to the author's departure for service overseas.
It's not that you're fairer than a lot of girls just as pleasing, but I doff my hat as a worshipper at your shrine.
Our squadrons on routine patrol in the vicinity of London, where our role is so other squadrons facing earlier action against enemy aircraft may top up fuel tanks and be airborne again without being attacked at their most vulnerable. Rapid refueling is key to getting off the ground without rude interruption by marauding Messerschmitts. It's early afternoon, August 1940. Our task, to ensure enemy aircraft get no opportunity on finding British squadrons briefly out of action to bomb or strafe them. Our task high above becomes the more difficult once direct sunlight catches on the cloud bank and becomes a bright haze, making it difficult to see the ground. The first alarm comes from the rear lookout section, focused on telltale glints of sunlight.
There's some to the southeast.
As we turn towards Thames estuary. Aircraft fire, up ahead and above. A pause. Then, aircraft on the port bow, above. Looking in that direction, I see them. Specks gleaming in the sky a mile or two ahead and 2,000 or 3,000 feet above us. So I open the throttle wider, climbing hard after them. I glance down, sunlight reflecting on the River Thames. The distant specks grow larger, resolving into Messerschmitt 109s. Their yellow noses shine gold in the sunlight. Beyond and below them is a formation of Messerschmitt 110s. A dozen Spitfires slide into position beneath the Messerschmitt 109s to creep up on the Messerschmitt 110s in front. It's now obvious we can't get to the bombers, as they're too far ahead, but we're coming within range of the Messerschmitt 110s, two squadrons of them. I single out a target and go in. Others of our formation spread out to follow. I open fire from almost astern, sending the German into a steep turn. I note a stream of tracer apparently going straight into him, but suddenly realize it's coming just over the top of my cockpit, from behind me. My heart misses a beat. When I pull sharply out of the way, I find another Messerschmitt 110 on my tail. How he got there, I don't know, but by turning, I get away from him. With none still after me, I go after a Messerschmitt 110, come at him from the side, firing a long burst till part of his port engine comes right out of the wing, plunging the aircraft on a long descent to make a huge splash of white foam just off the coast. It looks like the fight's over for now. I see a solitary Messerschmitt 110 half a mile away, limping homeward. His starboard engine's out of action. He's heading towards Belgium or Normandy. Doesn't realize he's got company. I plainly see the three blades of his stationary prop standing mutely out from the bulge of the engine, throttling back, feeling empathy and a bit of a cad. I take careful aim, check the range, and press the firing button. I try again. Nothing happens. Poised in the air, just behind him, I'm sure I've not used all my ammunition, so it must be a blockage. It's obvious he's oblivious to my presence. Sliding the Spitfire to one side, I pull into a barrel roll, inverting my aircraft in a manoeuvre that enables a hard look into the canopy covering the Messerschmitt's rear cockpit. Suddenly, The pilot looks up. It must be the fright of his life. I see no activity in the other cockpit. If the Messerschmitt took off with a gunner aboard, he must now be dead. The plane's exhaust lays a thin trail of black smoke as the one good engine's going on full power. I imagine the feelings of the pilot of the crippled Messerschmitt as he strives to get away from an enemy whose aircraft's intact, whereas the German's is not. He surely expects a clatter of bullets will inevitably find his body. The reality is radically different. I climb and turn across his nose, taking care to keep clear of his guns, rocking my wings as I straighten up and leave him in peace. He'll get home, all right, as long as he doesn't over-rev his remaining engine. Once the heat of the moment passes, I ponder all the way back to base my feelings. Why would I feel sorry for a German pilot who, tomorrow, on another raid, in another machine, is likely to shoot down one of ours? Human nature is so contrary. If I'd had ammunition that fired, I'm sure that I would have shot him down, because I wanted to get a kick out of it. Not because I hated that German personally. I don't know who he is. If we had not been at war, could I delight in killing? No. Sanity would prevail, so we should all once more be normal people. But that German fights for a filthy regime. It causes the war. He probably believes in it, even admires the Nazi teachings. Pity the poor pilot for being taken in by the lies and corruption. If only I'd the ammunition, I'd fire to finish him off. It's September the 5th, 1940. Autumn. I return from leave to news of squadron commanding officer missing in action. He probably bailed out, someone says. Who saw him last? One pilot believes the CO headed into an enemy formation alone. We spend the afternoon in melancholy, awaiting news. Towards evening, it comes. Of a body, of a pilot who apparently got clear of his aircraft, but too badly injured or low to deploy his parachute. The usual talk and laughter is absent at supper tonight in the mess. 2 days later, our squadron is assigned 2 patrols. The first proving fruitless. No sightings of enemy aircraft. We're flying as a wing, consisting of 3 squadrons, including Canadian and Czech pilots. The Spitfires are in the top covering squadron, being credited with better performance than those Hurricane squadrons. However, when our evening patrol chances upon a massive Luftwaffe force of 200 bombers and fighters, it looks as if only the Hurricanes will climb up in time to be in range, our squadron being too far behind. Nevertheless, from 17,000 feet, we continue climbing. A Messerschmitt 110 screams down just in front of me, a Hurricane on its tail. While the Hurricane breaks off, we open our throttles to close on the German pilot. He and his gunner bail out as their aircraft, in flames, crashes in a field. The crew land near the burning wreck. From aloft, it seems a maid from an adjoining country house takes them prisoner. Such successful conquests against German forces steadily erodes their air force. 4 German aircraft shot down in this evening's encounter, with no loss to ourselves. Another 2 days finds our squadron again assigned to cover the London area. With a combined force of 36 Spitfires, we climb to 22,000 feet towards the afternoon sun and alert to reports of incoming German air raids. Alter course to along the River Thames. Puffs of black smoke at 20,000 feet within a couple of miles of us confirm it's all on. The South London guns open up. I spot a swarm of aircraft in the midst of Akak. It's the sort of interception pilots dream of. From a little above we face an enemy come to bomb London. Behind the bombers I see their fighter escort stepped in layers, but too distant to intervene before we attack the big bombers. Then, they're gone. Turning back where we first clashed, a glimpse of dogfight high above. The German fighter escort is tangling with Spitfires. It leaves the German bombers more vulnerable to attack as they press onward. Where there must have been 50 of them, there's none left that I see until I head for central London. 7 Heinkel bombers that survive our first attack now abandon their bombs short of their intended target. They seem uncertain what to bomb, as if lost without a leader. 2 Messerschmitt 110s take up position beside the Heinkels. I fire on one of the Messerschmitts. Showering pieces, the starboard engine's air screw stops, the pilot making no attempt to avoid my fire, flying straight on. Puzzled, I overshoot him and turn round, ready to resume the attack. At the second burst, a huge cloud of smoke and flame belches out, sending the Messerschmitt into a slow dive. The mystery deepens as the other Messerschmitt dives away to flee as fast as his fighter will take him. The bombers are the more important to knock down, so I'm now pursuing them as they stream along in tighter formation than before. Then it dawns on me there's one fewer than before, only 6. I'll never know where the missing one disappeared to. I close in on the rearmost Heinkel, setting the sight on one of its engines, steadying the Spitfire in the slipstream. I fire, but nothing happens. I approach again, selecting a different Heinkel. Why is there no return fire? When I try again, my guns stop after a second. I see flames and black smoke round the cowling of the Heinkel. I break away, but there's nothing for me to do, being out of ammunition. I look back. Only 5 Heinkels airborne now. A thin streak of black smoke shows where the last ended up. I feel rather exhilarated on getting 2 bombers down. Making my way back to base, I fly over the River Thames again, eager to land and hear how the rest of our squadron fared. It'll be too late for tea. September the 14th, 1940. Our patrols due over London around noon. I nearly miss being airborne as my aircraft at first refuses to start. My fitter tinkers to get it going. In the time it takes, 2 other Spitfires have just been made serviceable. 2 extra pilots are standing by, so we, all 3, now form a wing to hopefully join the squadron patrol over London. We're barely on the outskirts of the metropolis when AKAC begins to bark at enemy aircraft far out in front. Closing the gap, we now find a loose formation of about 15 Dorniers protected by several Messerschmitt 109s above. Not apparently yet aware of our presence, the German force is fleeing, as we later discover, from an earlier encounter with the rest of our squadron. We're about to launch our attack from almost dead ahead of the Dorniers. I dive on the leading aircraft, misjudge deflection, so my bullets miss their target as I flash by and pull up in a climbing turn. One of the Messerschmitts, quick to react to our attack, comes at me from the side, before diving straight on beneath me, then disappears. Perhaps he's out of ammunition, so heads for home. Resuming my attack on the Dornier, I come in rather fast. As I fire a short burst, the Spitfire bumps in the bomber's slipstream. I turn toward the formation, in time to glimpse a Dornier bomber diving past me. I follow, firing on its starboard engine. Why is its pilot taking no evasive action? A Hurricane swims in view beside me, firing also. Finally, the Dornier can take no more punishment. So begins its dive into snowy white cloud set against a blue sky. I think the pilot may be dead, for only 2 parachutes mushroom from the stricken aircraft. The survivors drift over farmland, 1 to set foot in an English field, the other snags a treetop to dangle helplessly in the woods. His parachute shroud swings wildly in my Spitfire's slipstream, leaving the locals to deal with their unwelcome visitors. I make for base to refuel and gather our thoughts before our afternoon patrol.
Good night, sweetheart. All my prayers are for you.
Nazis, us flying at 20,000 feet above London again, when the RT warns us of hostile aircraft on our southern horizon. Sure enough, smoke smudges in the sky show alert air defences are in action against a host of black spots, weaving a tangle of condensation trails high over England. We climb steeply to the same altitude to confront them, preparing for the worst. Never before or since do I see so many enemy aircraft in the sky at once. They're there in their hundreds. Our squadron heads across the stream of enemy to engage with the Messerschmitt fighter escorts above them. Hopefully, our Hurricane squadrons attack the German bombers while we focus on the fighters. Until we reach the same level as their Messerschmitts, it feels like we're very vulnerable to attack. Squinting into glare, I see a flash of light that indicates it's now. I turn as we open out, still gaining altitude. I can't think why the Germans leave it so long to attack us. Is it for lack of enough fighters to escort so many bombers? A pair of Messerschmitts descend on me, but I manage to sidestep, so to speak. They pass harmlessly to the side and pull up in a climb ahead of me. I open wide my throttle to climb after them. When the leader turns one way, the other foolishly goes the other. That takes him across my nose. He sees me going after him, so puts on full inside rudder as he turns, skidding underneath me. Pulling around, half-stalled, I tear after him. Closing in on him, I get a short burst before he goes out of my sights. He certainly knows how to handle his Messerschmitt and leads me a dance as I try to get him in my sights again. Twice I try for a fleeting instant, but don't think my bursts hit him. Worse still, he's managing to gradually get around toward my tail. He's obviously turning the Messerschmitt 109 as hard as it'll go, nearly stalling. His ailerons, too, are snatching as one wing or the other dips violently. He abruptly flings himself out of its tight turn, rolls his Messerschmitt right over, passing across in front of me, inverted. He hopes, no doubt, I'll roll after him. That's if he realizes in a roll my Spitfire engine cuts out momentarily, whereas the Messerschmitt's petrol fuel injection engine keeps powering it regardless. But for a brief second, he's vulnerable to my fire as the enemy half-rights the Messerschmitt. It dives, looking to be out of control as it drops through cloud. From the top of that cloud layer, I spot another formation of Dorniers heading our way. Otherwise, the sky seems deserted now. I climb as hard as I can to position the Spitfire in the sun's orb on their approach. I doubt they see me before I dive onto the formation, firing a short burst at a leading Dornier as the Spitfire goes underneath the formation, having the speed to rise in position for another attack on the Dornier to try to break up the formation. My efforts may have had the opposite effect, bringing their aircraft even closer together till wings almost overlap. They leave no space for me to pass through them from the front. Evidently, they have now no fighter escort. I pass along the edge of their formation from the front beam, firing, yet I see no visible damage. As I break away behind them, I notice a straggler. A steep turn brings me firing at one engine of his. That's when I hear a sharp metallic bang, then my guns stop. I deduce, after a quick glance at all the engine instruments, that the Spitfire's got a bullet fired by a German rear gunner, not affecting its flight. Without ammunition, I have nothing more to achieve here. The London Blitz launching intensive air attacks on the City of London to bring Britain to its knees is not the intensive, short, sharp success Nazi Germany hoped for. Looking back, we notice September 1940 is a turning point. The 22nd of September is a dirty day. Low rain clouds obscure the sun. Taking advantage of this, a Dornier pays us a provocative visit, dropping a stick of bombs on the Spitfire's dispersal point. A bomb blows an aircraft up on its nose. Several Spitfires, airborne at the time and alert to the raid, catch the Germans in the act and fire a burst in their direction. The Dawnie is quick to seek cover in the clouds. The enemy now has almost given up large-scale bombing of Britain, as German soil suffers the same threat as the Allies gear up production of planes and recruitment of more pilots, aircrew, and improved radio direction and ranging, which forms the acronym RADAR.
Let me hear you whisper this. Au revoir, but not goodbye. Leave me with a farewell kiss. With joy we'll dream away each sorrow. With love we'll live for each tomorrow. So let's part, just you and I, with au revoir, but not goodbye. One more happy day has gone on its way. So before you go, dear, I would like to say, au revoir, but not goodbye. But not goodbye. With joy we'll dream away each sorrow. With love we'll live for each tomorrow. So let's part, just you and I, with au revoir, but not goodbye. Au revoir, but not goodbye.
To hear more excerpts from the book by B.J. Allen, Spitfire, published in 1942 by Butler and Tanner in Britain, tune in again at the same time next week. Free FM is proudly supported by New Zealand On Air.
Are in the sky, ways on their daily vigil bow. We'll make one of their number, write our name upon the wing. When the planes are flying over, you will hear all Britain sing. There's music in the sky, don't you hear the engines humming? Prepare to or die. The British planes are coming, steadfast, reliant, Spitfire or Defiant, so give a rousing cheer.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.